Well, the issues polled by the Women Vote Lobby Group are also the backbone interests of other longer-standing women's interests groups, like the National Foundation for Australian Women. That group has been painstakingly writing analyses at their website of dozens of policy areas and charting where the known policy offerings of the parties sit in this campaign. Professor Helen Hodgson is on the Foundation's board. She's a tax and transfer system expert, an expert on superannuation and trusts, among other things. She serves with multiple organisations as an advisor, and she's at Curtin University. Helen Hodgson, thanks for speaking with us. The women of Women Vote say that their polling shows a majority of women want tax-deductible childcare. If we start with that, what is the best way to give women a fairer deal on childcare costs?
Well, it's important that we do give people, women, a fair deal on childcare costs, because that really does affect their ability to go back into the workforce. But in fact, we find that subsidies are a much fairer way of providing that rather than tax deductibility. I think the problem is people think that tax deductibility means you're getting it all back. But in fact, what happens is that the subsidy system that we have in place at the moment gives a much better deal to people where the family income is less than about $175,000. It's only once the family income goes over $175,000 that you start to say that tax deductibility is going to be worth more than the subsidies that we have in place at the moment.
So tax deductibility better for richer women than for poorer women, essentially?
Essentially, because richer women are paying a much higher marginal rate of tax, but a woman who's working part-time, 2 days a week at a minimum paid job, isn't going to get very much back on their tax because they don't pay any tax. So tax deductibility is only effective when you've got people who are actually paying tax.
The government says its childcare subsidy is making childcare more accessible and affordable for nearly a million families. It says typically a family will be about $1,300 a year better off under its approach. Should governments persist with that approach then?
What government did a couple of years ago with simplifying the system so that there was only the one set of rules to deal with rather than multiple sets of rules has certainly made a difference. We would actually say, though, that childcare is so important getting women back into the workforce that we believe that that childcare should be pretty much free for people in that middle range income levels where they are facing effective marginal tax rates of 90% if they go to work for more than 3 days a week.
So the government's done good work, but Bill Shorten's announcement this week would improve the situation further for women?
It would take it further. It would cover the gap for a lot more middle-income families where you're looking at whether you are going to work 3 days a week or 4 days a week. It would help cover the gap there. I mean, realistically, there does have to be some cost constraints involved, and that's the reason for tapering it off for high-income women. But even at that top end, they're going to be getting more under the Shorten plan than they are currently under the government's arrangements.
And the Labor proposal to boost the wages of childcare and early education workers, is there a special argument for early childhood workers and childcare, where providers get their profits essentially from government funding, don't they?
They do. And this has been an issue on our radar for quite some time at the National Foundation for Australian Women, and that is that these feminised workforce, these caring workforces, use the services of women who are often paid very low rates. In some areas, they're on the zero-hour contracts. With childcare in particular, one of the things that's happened in that field is that it's become far more professionalised in terms of requiring qualifications, in terms of the education component that's delivered with childcare. And this is something that's very important to recognise. Childcare isn't just babysitting. Childcare actually involves educational programs. And for that reason, there's been an increase in professionalism, and you have people with similar level of qualifications, depending on whether they go into the childcare sector or the primary education sector, there's a huge difference in their pay. So, yes, we do see a case for childcare workers. We also think there would be a case for aged care and those other feminised industries, but we're willing to wait and see what comes out of the Aged Care Royal Commission in terms of how that is working in terms of the public-private split and the sponsorship and funding provided by the government.
Now, tax is a big battleground ground for the parties in this election, quite different proposals from Labor and the Coalition. Has either side, though, looked at their tax offerings with gender as a fundamental consideration? And if not, what would it look like if they did?
Well, the thing that we have to remember is that our tax system is technically neutral. There was that line that came out of Senate estimates last year, do we have a pink or a blue tax system? Well, we don't. But what we need to remember is that women live their lives differently to men. And there is work that says that if you were to actually reduce the tax rates that women paid, women who are currently working part-time are more likely to increase their participation in the workforce. But what we look at here is the effective marginal tax rate is actually a combination of actual tax, removal of benefits, what you pay in childcare. And so if you can't deal with the actual change in the actual tax system, then perhaps we should be looking at those other areas, the transfer payments, the family tax benefits, the means testing on that, and the childcare, as we've discussed. Because if you adjust those, then you can make it more worthwhile for women to come back into the workforce, and that will increase the productivity of the country and give a big economic boost.
You've been particularly concerned too about superannuation. You've argued in the lead up to the recent federal budget that more work is needed on super for women. Did you see that to start with in the budget, and what area in particular do you want it focused on?
There wasn't really anything on super for women in the federal budget. There have been some announcements since then from the Greens and from the Labor Party in relation to some areas that we think need to be tweaked. For a start, we have the concern about the very lowest paid women who are earning less than $450 a month from one employer. They will often have multiple jobs with very low rates, and no employer has to pay superannuation on their behalf. So that's an area that we would like to see some action on. The issue of raising the rate from the current 9.5% up to 12% is something that we think does need to, we need to take action on that, but it needs to be done very carefully so that low-income earners don't actually lose take-home pay. So there's a range of issues there. The problem in there were some changes made a couple of years ago by the Liberal government that were supposed to favour women, but the problem was that, in fact, the structure of the system means that when you're saying women can put more into super, or when you're saying people can put more into super, and we've structured it in a way that will assist women, in fact, they found that most of those measures are still going to be more accessible to men. So this issue of having the catch-up of saying that if you haven't contributed your full amount for the last 5 years, you can top it up. The real question is how many women have the extra money to put into their super over that five-year period when they're returning into the workforce. So you have to be careful how you structure these things.
Now, just looking at the sort of wider picture, just last month, The Economist ranked Australia 17th in a list of countries who are, you know, doing best or worst for working women. Overall progress towards gender equality has stalled in Australia, was their conclusion. Is there something more fundamental in the way that government works, whoever's in office, that is putting a brake on progress towards a more sort of holistic look at issues that affect women?
Well, this is something that we've been arguing for a while now. Back in the 80s, Australia had a reputation as one of the leaders in what we call gender budgeting, which is basically saying that every policy that's put out there is checked to make sure that it doesn't affect women and men in a way that has a prejudicial effect. Now, Australia was one of the leaders with that 30 years ago, but it gradually tapered off. And we're actually, 5 years ago, the National Foundation for Australian Women started doing that as an external group of experts saying what is actually happening in budget to assist women and what is working against the interests of women. So what we have argued for that whole period of time is that the government needs to pick this up again. And there are signs that the government is moving in that direction. They're starting to build capacity again within the Office for Women. And the Labor Party has made a strong commitment to say that they will move back towards a full gender budget. And the purpose there is to say, let's have a holistic look. Let's not just say, this is a women's policy. Let's look at the policy and say, if we have men who use it and women who use it, is the effect going to be the same? And that's what gender budgeting does. It looks at the overall holistic effect of all of the policies put together. And so far, over the last 5 years, that just has not been happening.
And the National Foundation for Australian Women has an ongoing project of analysing election promises as the campaign goes on. So people can go to that website and have a look. Helen Hodgson, thank you very much for speaking with PM.
Thank you very much.
Professor Helen Hodgson from Curtin University.